Good morning, everyone. The topic of today's shiur is something which is going to be very relevant in the coming weeks. It'll be relevant three times in the coming weeks, and that is the topic of Erev Tavshilin. The Erev Tavshilin, as we know, is needed in a situation where Shabbos is preceded by a Yontif. In a situation where Friday happens to be Yontif, so there is a challenge as to how one is allowed to cook for Shabbos in such a situation. And just as a background, the reason for this is, the Torah tells us, as we know, there's a pasuk in Parshas Bo which tells us that the difference between, the basic difference between the laws of Yontif, and when we speak about Yontif now, we're not discussing Chol HaMoed, we're discussing the actual days of Yontif, such as the 2 days of Rosh Hashanah, the first 2 days of Sukkot, and the last 2 days, Shemini Atzeres and Simchas Torah. That's what we're referring to when we speak to about Yontif. That one of the basic differences between Yontif and Shabbos is that on Yontif one is allowed to cook. On Shabbos the person is not allowed to cook, as we know, and let you know the commonly people put up food ahead of time, but cooking, you know, put up in a crock pot or something like that, people put up food on Friday and leave it for Shabbos so they could have hot food on Shabbos. But to cook on Shabbos itself is forbidden by the Torah, and that to that there is no heter. However, on Yontif it's different. On Yontif a person is allowed to cook. The question comes up, is a person allowed to cook from Yontif for after Yontif? In other words, did the Torah give a blanket heter that you can cook on Yontif and, you know, you can cook whatever you want? Or is it limited just to what's needed for Yontif? So the accepted halacha that we know is that on Yontif a person is only allowed to cook for Yontif. A person cannot cook for a different day. A person cannot cook for a non-Yontif day. And thus, the question presents itself that in a situation that we're going to be looking at next week, which is that you have the 2 days of Rosh Hashanah, Thursday and Friday, and then immediately followed by Shabbos, so how are you supposed to cook for that Shabbos? How is it going to be possible to have food cooked for Shabbos if you cannot cook on Yontif for a day which is not Yontif? The same Shaila will present itself 2 weeks later on the first days of Sukkot, which also fall out Thursday and Friday, and then Shabbos, and it will present itself a third time the week after that, when Shemini Atzeres falls out on Thursday, Simchas Torah falls out on Shabbos, on Friday, and then is followed by Shabbos. Now, it should be pointed out that this problem of the 3 weeks, in other words, today's shiur will, you know, someone was just asked that, what are we going to do without learning for the next few weeks? So it was suggested that maybe today's shiur should sustain us for the next few weeks. So, in fact, it will, because of the fact that they're going to need this information 3 times. It should be pointed out, however, that our friends and relatives and brothers and sisters who live in Eretz Yisrael will only have this situation 1 time, because of the fact that they do observe 2 days of Rosh Hashanah, but, as we know in Eretz Yisrael, only 1 day of Yontif is observed, and therefore the first day of Sukkot is the only Yontif day. So therefore Thursday will be Yontif, but Friday will be Chol HaMoed, so there will be no issue. So they could make on Friday the food for Shabbos. So to the following week, Shemini Atzeres and Simchas Torah are blended into 1 day in Eretz Yisrael, and therefore Friday will already be after Yontif, and therefore one will be able to cook for Shabbos. So in Erev Tavshilin, it's for us who live in Chutz La'aretz, is going to be made 3 times in the next 4 weeks. In Eretz Yisrael, only going to be made once. Now, the question is, what is it all about, and how does a person go about making an Erev Tavshilin? What is the inyan here? It seems to be a bit of a unknown situation. Everybody, you know, you have to pick up a piece of bread or a malakala and a piece of fish or whatever it is. So, what is it all about? So, to begin to understand the topic of Erev Tavshilin, we have to look at the Gemara. The starting point here is the Gemara Maseches Pesachim on Daf Mem Vav Amud Beis. And the Gemara here, this is on the sheet. I marked off side one, I believe, on the sheet. Okay, and I tried to mark off where the starting point of the Gemara is, if you could see it there. The Gemara says as follows. The Gemara says, Itmar ha'ofa miyantif l'chol. The Gemara says, if a person were to bake on yantif for a weekday, so has, the Gemara wants to know, has he violated a Torah law or not? As we mentioned, the Torah allows a person to cook on yantif for yantif, but not for a different day. Is that, would that mean that the person who did such an act, if he cooked on yantif or baked on yantif for a weekday, would he have, could be considered having violated a Torah law and thus be subject to the punishment of Malkus or not? So the Gemara says, Rabba Omar Eino Loke, Rav Chisna Omar Loke. We have a difference of opinion whether he gets Malkus or not. What is this based on? Says the Gemara, Rav Chisna Omar Loke, Rav Chisna says that the person who did this would have violated a Torah law, because Lo Amrinam, we do not say, Ho Mikloi Le Archim Chazule, which I will explain in a moment. Rabba Omar Eino Loke, Rabba says that a person who cooked on Yontif for after Yontif would not have violated the Torah law. Why not? Because Amrinam we say Hoel. Because we say a remarkable thing, which is a phrase that we find in the Gemara, Hoel ve'im mikloi archim. Chazle. What does this mean? What do these Aramaic words mean? This means that the reason why a person who cooks on Yontif for a weekday would not be violating the Torah law is because of the fact that it is possible that he may need this food on Yontif itself. How so? Because it's possible that some unexpected guests are going to knock on his door and show up the Yontif afternoon after he already ate his meal, and they're going to, you know, come in and you're going to want to serve them food. And thus, the food that he cooked on Yontif, even though his intention was that it should be for after Yontif, but nevertheless, it cannot be considered totally unnecessary because of the fact that it's possible that he may need it. He may need it. You'll say, well, man, how likely is that to happen? It doesn't really matter. It's possible. Everybody has people that they know, and you never know what could happen. Somebody could come to you for an unexpected visit. You're going to want to serve them, and thus, the food that you made that you didn't need for Yontif per se is considered that it might still be needed for Yontif. And therefore, a person who did cook on Yontif, let's say, Yontif, just to take an example, let's say Yontif was Tuesday, and Wednesday was already not Yontif, and he cooked on Tuesday extra food with the intention that he should have it for Wednesday. Why? The woman said, once I'm cooking, I might as well have food for tomorrow also. So you say, well, you can't do that. The heter to cook on Yontif is only for Yontif. However, this is considered that it might be needed for Yontif, and on that basis, we could say that they have not violated the Torah law. That is the opinion of Rabba. However, Rav Chisna disagrees, and he says that we don't say such a thing, and thus a person who cooked on Yontif for the week would be violating the law of the Torah. So the Gemara turns around and says, "So Amar Le Rabba or Rav Chisna." So the question was then asked, "Would he dug the Amrit Lo Amrin and Hoel?" So you who don't agree with this principle of Hoel, this idea that maybe a person will show up, so Heid Ofen Miyantif LeShabbos. So he asked him. So then, according to you, how are you allowed to cook from Yontif to Shabbos? In other words, it was known in the time of the Gemara, it was well known, it's documented in the Mishnah, that you are allowed to cook on Yontif for Shabbos. And here we're saying that you're not allowed to cook on Yontif for a different day, and even according to Rav Chisna, even the possibility that some guests may show up at your door is not enough to permit cooking on Yontif for a different day. So how then can a person make a preparation for Shabbos? To which the Gemara says, so he responded and said, Amalei Mishum Eruvei Tafshilin. He answered that this is because you made an Erev Tafshilin. To which the question was presented. He asked him back, so big deal, what does it help to have an Erev Tafshilin help? What does it help to make this thing called Erev Tafshilin, which we will soon discuss? So to just cut to the chase here a little bit, so the Gemara concludes that he said, Midoraisa Tzarche Shabbos Nasim Biyantif, that really Shabbos is not a problem. That even though you're not allowed to cook from Yontif for a weekday, but you could cook from Yontif to Shabbos because they're both holy days, and therefore they're both considered the days of Kedusha, and thus from Yontif to Shabbos would not be a problem. Min HaTorah. However, the Rabbanon prohibited it. So the rabbis were not excited about this idea because they said that even though technically it would be permitted to cook from Yontif to Shabbos, but if you get into that habit, the person who doesn't realize, the person who's not tuned in to the finer points of halacha will just conclude that, well, you can cook on Yontif for any day. He won't realize that Shabbos is special. And he may come to cook even for a weekday. So therefore, the Rabbanon mandated the Erev Tavshila. That's the Gemara. In other words, just to say it over a little clearly, in other words, the Gemara is telling us that there are two possible ways to explain how you can cook on next week, on Friday for Shabbos. Right? Next week, Friday, is going to be the second day of Rosh Hashanah. How are you allowed to cook on that day for Shabbos? There are two possible explanations. One of them is because of the fact that when you're cooking for Shabbos, it is not totally deemed that it's for Shabbos. It could technically be still needed today because if an unexpected visitor arrives, you may need to serve that person food, and therefore, in effect, you are cooking for Yontif itself. Even though your intention is not for that, but it's possible, you never know, right? On the other, that's one possible explanation. The other possible explanation is that really, it isn't a problem to cook from Yontif for Shabbos because they're both holy days and they want Kedusha, and therefore it's not considered like a slap in the face to Yontif to prepare for Shabbos because Shabbos is also a holy day. But the rabbis were not excited about this because of the fact that you may come to say that if I can cook for Shabbos, I can cook for any day, and thus they required Erev Tavshila. So it comes out that we have two possible explanations for why, according to the law of the Torah, there is no problem. However, both explanations agree that one would be required to do something on Erev Yontif, which we call Erev Tavshilin, in order to fully legitimize cooking on Shabbos Yontif. Again, according to the first explanation, it's because of the fact that really there is no problem because you may need the food for Yontif itself, just that the Rabbanan required an Erev Tavshilin, which we'll explain why in a minute. According to the second explanation, it's because of the fact that really there is no problem cooking on Yontif for Shabbos, but technically, min HaTorah, but the Rabbanan required an Erev Tavshilin because you may come to say that you can cook on Shabbos on Chol on Yontif for a weekday. Yes, I'm sorry. We'll get to that. So this is the background. This is the background why you need to do something special when there is a situation that we have facing us next week. In other words, next week, I would assume that on Wednesday, which is Erev Rosh Hashanah, in every shul, they're going to announce, remember to make an Erev Tavshilin. Right, this should be announced. I'm sure it will be announced. They should really post the signs all over town, right, in the kosher stores. They should have it. It would be worthwhile that by the checkout counter, because it's very easy to forget, and you're not used to doing it, it doesn't come up all that often. And they'll announce, you have to make an Erev Tavshilin. What's going to mean, what is it going to require to make an Erev Tavshilin? So we know from experience that what it's going to require is you're going to have to take a baked item and a cooked item and hold them in your hand and declare that, you say a bracha and say that with this that I have in my hand, I am going to be permitted to cook on Yontif for Shabbos. That is what an Erev Tavshilin is. Okay, why is this procedure necessary? So the reason why it's necessary is because of the fact that to permit cooking from Yontif to Shabbos is not the simplest thing. It's not the simplest thing. According to one explanation, it really should be forbidden. However, since technically you may have guests showing up unexpectedly late on the day on Yontif, so you're allowed to cook extra, and thus that food would be for Shabbos. That's one explanation. The other explanation is that really you could cook from Yontif to Shabbos, But both explanations agree that whatever, however you view it, there is a requirement that you have to do something on Erev Yontif to make a special indication that there's something special going on here, which we will explain in a minute. Okay, now, what does it help? So let's get right to that. So what does it help to make an Erev Hafshil? And what is it? What is this game? It seems like a funny thing to do. Like, how exactly does the Erev Hafshilin help the situation? So for this, we have to look at the other side of the page of Gemara Masechus Beya on the Tesvav Amadei, that the Gemara says as follows. The Gemara says, I have it marked off towards the top. The Gemara says, my time, what is the reason that the rabbis instituted the Erev Hafshilin? What does it accomplish? So we have here two explanations. The first explanation is Amar Rava Kadesha Yivrar Mana Yafil Shabbos Umana Yafil Yom. Rava said the following. Rava said, I'll tell you, the reason why the rabbis mandated this procedure that should take place, that a person should make an Erev Tafshilin, is because of the concern that they wanted to make sure that Shabbos doesn't sort of get swept under the rug. Because even though, as we just said, technically it could be permitted to cook on Shabbos, on Yom Tov for Shabbos, again, either because you may have guests showing up or because of the fact that it's outright permitted, but there was a concern that if a person leaves all of their cooking for Shabbos to take place on Yom Tov, that they may eat all the food, they may forget about Shabbos. And you get, so when you're cooking the food on Yom Tov itself, so you know sometimes it's hard to put away some. You know, when you have it right in front of you, you know it takes a self discipline to say, even though this food looks delicious, but I'm not going to eat it now. I'm going to put it away for tomorrow. So they might actually cook the food on Yom Tov and eat it on Yom Tov. So in order to alleviate that problem, the Rabbanan said, you have to start to prepare on Erev Yontif with the hope that on Erev Yontif you're not eating any of the food that you're cooking. All the food you're cooking is going to be for the coming days. And once you're already in that mode, that it's all preparation, I'm not eating anything, I'm just preparing it, so then you'll make it your business to put aside a nice amount for Shabbos. So in other words, if you start on Erev Yontif, you won't necessarily leave everything until Yom Tov itself. But once you're already preparing, so you'll say, okay, you know what, let me prepare already some things for Shabbos, and I'll put it aside, and I'll hold it for Shabbos. Right? That is the explanation of Rav. If you wait until Yom Tov, there's a concern that you may come to eat all the food that you cooked. You may, even though you would have had enough with you cooked extra food for Shabbos, so you say, why would I eat that? But the reality is that when a person has food in front of them, and they're in a good mood, which hopefully a person is on Yom Tov in a good mood, he may come to eat that too. Yeah, I'm sorry.
The idea that they're preparing from one Yom Tov to the next Yom Tov, from one Yom Tov day to the next Yom Tov day.
Yeah.
Isn't there some restrictions?
Yeah, right. But we're talking here about Yom Tov to Shabbos. This whole thing, Erev Tafshilin, is just from Yom Tov to Shabbos.
I know, but what's the meaning of not preparing from?
There is such a thing that Yom Tov has its own kedusha, and therefore, you know, the person should not make such preparation. But that's really beyond this. In other words, here we're talking about going from Yom Tov to Shabbos when you have no choice. In other words, Yom Tov to Yom Tov, you could avoid. You could just cook on each day of Yom Tov. You can cook the food you need for Yom Tov. The Yom Tov to Shabbos, you have no choice because you're not allowed to cook on Shabbos. Right? So the first explanation is that a person is going to make sure that a person has his food for Yom Tov, for Shabbos. The Gemara says, Rav Ashi says, Kidei sheyomru ein ofen miyontif l'shabbos, kal v'chomer miyontif l'chol. That Rav Ashi said that really, the reason why you need an Erev Tafshilin is something else. The reason why you need an Erev Tafshilin is because of the fact, really you could cook on Yom Tov for Shabbos. However, the Rabbanu were concerned that a person may confuse himself and say that if you're allowed to cook on Yom Tov for Shabbos, you're allowed to cook on Yom Tov for a weekday also. So therefore, they made you do something special on Erev Yom Tov as a reminder to yourself, as a reminder that, you know, this is something special. This is only because of because it's going to be Shabbos. It's only because of Shabbos that you're allowed to do this, not for any other day. Okay, so now, it's a little confusing, but just to summarize this, so we have the question of how it is, in other words, an Erev Tavshilin, let's view it this way. An Erev Tavshilin is a rabbinic institution. This is a Din Midrabbanan. Now, if the Torah prohibits cooking from Yontif to Shabbos, then the rabbis cannot allow something that the Torah does not allow. Right? We have a tradition that the Rabbanan cannot be Mater and Isser in the Torah, the Kumvase. The rabbis sometimes could ban something that the Torah, a mitzvah that the Torah commanded us to do, the rabbis could restrict. In other words, for example, if Rosh Hashanah would fall out on Shabbos, we would not blow the shofar on Rosh Hashanah, we would not shake a lulav on the Shabbos of Sukkot, even though the Torah commands us to do such a thing, because the rabbis prohibited it because they were concerned that you may carry it in a place where there's no Erev. So you ask the question, well, who are the rabbis to go ahead and ban something that the Torah mandated? So the answer is that we have a tradition, which is mentioned in the Gemara, that the Rabbanan were authorized, the Rabbanan were given the power to even restrict something that the Torah wanted if it is b'shev b'al tasa. In other words, if to passively go against the Torah law, the rabbis allowed. So therefore, not to blow the shofar on Rosh Hashanah, which is a violation, you say, the Torah says you have to do it. So what kind of thing is this? The Torah doesn't make any difference, distinction between Shabbos and any other day. So where did the rabbis come to say you shouldn't blow the shofar? They're worried you may carry it in the street, so okay, what could you do? But the Torah says you have to blow it. The answer is, because v'shev al tasa, to passively violate a Torah law, the rabbis have the authority. But to actively violate a Torah law, the rabbis do not have the authority. And therefore, if the Rabbanan got together and decided that it would be a good idea to eat pork on a certain day of the year, so they would not be allowed to do that because of the fact that that is actively going against the law of the Torah. As such, so one could ask, so how is an Erev Tavshilin permitting us to go ahead and cook from Yontif to Shabbos if the Torah bans it? If someone were to ask you that question, the answer is, well, there's one of two possibilities. Either the Torah does not ban it, really, midaraisa, you are allowed to cook from Yontif to Shabbos, or because of the fact that there's the possibility that a guest may show up, and if a guest may show up at your door, so then it comes out that even though your intention was cooking for Shabbos, but in effect you were really cooking for something that you might need on Yontif. And on those bases, it would come out that it is not a violation of the law of the Torah. Nevertheless, with all of that, the Rabbanan came along and said despite those reasons, you have to take action on Erev Yontif. There's something that you have to do on Erev Yontif in order to make this permissible, and that is that you have to make this little ceremony, which takes literally 2 minutes to do, right? They're called Erev Tavshilin. You have to make this little procedure, and if you're going to do that, then everything will be permitted. If not. The reason why they required the Erev Tavshilin is either because of the fact that they were concerned that people will forget, that they'll get confused and say, if you can cook for Shabbos, you can cook for a weekday also. That's one possible explanation. The other possible explanation is, in order that you should prepare well for Shabbos, they said do something on Erev Yontif so that to make sure that you will in fact have food for Shabbos. If you wait till Yontif itself, you may get excited about all this good food and may come to eat it. Yes.
You still have to make the Erev Tavshilin. If you're not going to cook, if you're going to be a guest for all of Yontif and Shabbos,
okay.
Or,
so if you're going
to
be a guest,
whatever.
So so that's a good question. We'll get to that later. If you're going to be a guest in someone's house, we have a psak that's brought in the Shulchan Aruch, and it's really clarified in the Shulchan Aruch Harav that if you are a guest in someone's home for an entire Yontif, you don't have to make an Erev Tavshilin. And so too, only the head of the household has to make an Erev Tavshilin. If a person has, the children don't have to make their own Erev Tavshilin. If even married children who come to visit for Yontif they're not, even though you say, well, they don't eat here regularly. They eat on their own. They're just guests beyond it. They don't either have to make an Erev Tavshilin. And not only that, but even if it's not a family member, but if you buy somebody's house for the entire yontif, you don't have to make an Erev Tavshilin. If you're only a guest for a meal, that's different. But if you move in by somebody for the whole yontif, then you're considered part of their household. The same thing would be if a person had, let's say, a live-in maid who was Jewish, right? So then you also, that person would also be included in the Erev Tavshilin. Anybody who is going to be part of your household for that yontif is included. Yes.
But if you're invited out for all of your meals, if you're staying home,
I think then you would have to make an Erev Tavshilin, because you're not considered really that you're part of, so it has to be that you're part of someone else's household. That's what it has to be. And as we'll see, now you'll say, but you don't need, you know, but if you're invited out for all the meals, you don't need an Erev Tavshilin anyway, because you're not going to be cooking, right? In other words, that is, you can make that argument, but we'll see that Erev Tavshilin helps for things besides cooking also. Hopefully we'll get to that. Yes?
Can you count on the Erev Tavshilin that the Rav...
I'm going to get to that. I get that. We'll see. Now, just to take this a step further, if in fact we go with these explanations, so we have to take into consideration the following point. We said that the reason why the rabbis were allowed, so to speak, to give us a heter to cook from Yontif to Shabbos, and again, they are never authorized to go ahead and sanction the active violation of the Torah law. So if the Torah prohibited such a thing, the rabbis could not allow it, could not permit it. So we said one explanation is because of the fact that really you're not cooking for Shabbos, really you're cooking for Yontif. Why are you cooking for Yontif? Because of the fact that guests may show up unexpectedly at the door late in the day. Now, we have to consider the following. If that is in fact true, then it should come out that an Erev Tavshilin would only allow you to cook on Yontif for Shabbos if you cook early enough that if guests showed up, you'd be able to feed them. However, if you were going to go ahead and put up the chum 10 minutes before sunset on the second day of Rosh Hashanah, and you say, well, you know, we need chums for Shabbos, and we have this, crock pot which was on already from, was left on, you couldn't turn it on Yom Tov, but it was on already from before, let's just say, right, then, or I'm going to put it on the top of the stove with some sort of black or whatever it may be, right, I'm going to go ahead and do that. And after all, I don't need the food till tomorrow anyway, so it'll cook overnight. And, by the time I get home from shul tomorrow, everything will be great. But that really shouldn't be permitted, because what's the whole justification for this? If the justification is that I'm really cooking because I may need the food today, well, what's it going to help? If a person knocks on your door at that time and say, oh, so nice, why don't you come in? Hey, you want some raw chunk? Right? that what you would accomplish by that is that you'll never have the problem again, because no one will ever come back. But the fact of the matter is that would not help to solve this problem. On the other hand, if you go with the explanation that there's an outright heter to cook from Yontif to Shabbos because of the fact that they're both holy days and it's Kedusha Achas, and therefore it's considered like, it's all the same thing, and the cooking for Yontif to Shabbos is not in any way disrespectful to Yontif, then it would be permitted even to put up the Shalom at the last minute. So we should bear in mind that the halacha really is that the poskim, the majority of the poskim seem to hold by the first explanation, which is that the basis for the heter is because guests may show up. And because of that, we have a psak that is brought in the poskim, the Shabura says it over, that a person really, if you're going to cook on Yontif for Shabbos, you really have to make it your business to do the cooking earlier rather than later. Earlier rather than later. In other words, don't wait till the last minute. Because if you wait till the last minute, it could be that you don't have a heter. Right? Because if the explanation is that it's because a guest may show up at my door, the cooking that you're doing now isn't going to help the guest who shows up at your door. And therefore, it's totally unjustified. And if it's unjustified, now it comes out that you violated the law of the Torah, that you're not allowed to cook on Yom Tov for a different day. So therefore, it is brought in the poskim that a person really should try, a woman cooking on Yontif for Shabbos should really try to prepare a little bit earlier, so that it is possible the shear that's given is that if the food could be at least half cooked by sunset, that would be good enough. That would be good enough. In other words, it doesn't have to be that you cooked everything in the morning per se. It commonly doesn't happen, because the practical realities of life is that a woman serving food on Yontif, when she gets up the second day of Yontif, focuses her attention on the coming meal and doesn't get around to cooking for Shabbos until the afternoon. That's pretty much by everybody the case. Nevertheless, we have the shear that as long as the food could be eaten, even b'shas hadchak, means even in case of difficulty, so we have a klal in the Gemara that there is the amount of cooking that's needed in order for food to be considered cooked. So there is a shear given that it should be half cooked. Some say a third cooked, but for this we would be machmir that it should be at least half cooked. A half cooked item could be eaten by a person in a situation of need. In other words, if you were really hungry and you had nothing else and it was half cooked, you might eat it. Okay, less than that, you wouldn't eat it. So therefore, this is the shear that's given, that as long as the food could reach that level. But to put up the chum at the last minute on Yontif for Shabbos is not the right thing to do. And therefore, the post can bring that it was customary in the old times that people would make early Shabbos, that even though we spoke once about the pros and cons of making an early Shabbos, you know, now already it's coming to the end of the season, but you know, you make you accept Shabbos earlier before the traditional time in the summer season. People want to start earlier. There are those who don't, for reasons that I think we once discussed, there are those who don't like to do that. But when it came to this situation, people across the board, accepted Shabbos early when it was Yontif going into Shabbos, because of the fact that they wanted to make sure that the cooking was done in the appropriate time. So in order to make sure that it was done, they said, we're going to make Shabbos early. So that way you can't run it down to the wire. We're going to start early, and therefore you have to make your preparations early. This is the basis, this is a fundamental issue when it comes to the Erev Tavshilin. Now, just to cover a few of the basic points, how exactly do you make an Erev Tavshilin? Okay, what do you do? So as we know, you have to have a baked item and a cooked item. A baked item and a cooked item, the reason for that is because you may bake on Yontif, you may cook on Yontif. So really, you should have one of each. The Dievet, a person, would be enough to have just a cooked item. A cooked item, you must have. A baked item, you really should have also. If a person didn't have one, it could be that it would be all right. But the lechatchila, certainly, a person should take a baked item and a cooked item. Now, the irony of the Erev Tavshilin is, as is practiced currently, is that you don't have to have cooked or baked those items yourself. Meaning that what a person could take a piece of matzah that he bought in a store and a piece of jarred gefilte fish and say, here's my baked item and here's my cooked item. Even though I didn't bake it and I didn't cook it, it doesn't matter. Because the fact is that I have it ready and this is my preparation. I prepared for Shabbos because I arranged this food. I have this food. This is going to be for Shabbos. And you hold these items in your hand and you say a bracha, which is printed in the Siddurim. And then you say, along with that bracha, a certain declaration which is presented to us in Aramaic. A person should really know what they're saying. So you could say it in English if you want. It may even be better to say it in English, but you have to have a good translation, because you have to spell out what the purpose of the Erev is. And basically, the declaration that a person makes, he says that with this Erev, it is going to be permitted for me to go ahead and to cook and to bake and to light candles, which we'll get to in a minute, and other items that I need to do from Yontif to Shabbos. And that's it. That's the way the Erev Tavshilin is made. So the whole process literally takes 2 minutes. Two-minute thing, but those 2 minutes may be the best 2 minutes, most important 2 minutes you spent on Erev Yontif. Because the person who didn't make an Erev Tavshilin has tzaras. as we'll see. So you really have to remember, it would be a very good idea if a person had, you know, as soon as they came home from davening on Erev Yontif, right away, before doing anything, just do it and it's done. And that way, you know, the fact that it's so easy to do and it takes such a small amount of time to do causes very often people to push it off because you say, I'm busy now, I'll do it later. It only takes a minute anyway. But we all probably have seen, perhaps even experienced, that, you know, you walk into shul yontif night, and as the chazan is carrying on with the nusach on Rosh Hashanah, you go, oh my gosh, I forgot to make an Erev Hashem. So then it's not such a simple matter. There are ways to deal with it. We'll see. On Rosh Hashanah, it's harder a little bit to deal with it. But the fact is that the best idea, just do it right away. The minhag that is accepted, the Mishabur brings, the poskim say that even though technically, in order to make an Erev Tavshilin, you just need the food, you would just need a cooked item the size of a kezias, and a baked item the size of an egg, a kebeya, which is very, very small. Nevertheless, because of the concept of hither mitzvah, that a mitzvah that is done should be done nicely, so therefore the practice is that one would take a nice amount, either commonly for a baked item, a person would take either a whole challah or at least a whole, one whole matzah, if you wanted to go that route, or, you know, sometimes people would designate a whole box of matzah, whatever it is, but it should be something nice. It doesn't have to be that much, right? So too, if a person is with a cooked item, so again, it only has to be the size of a kezias, it only has to be a very small size, but again, because of hiddur mitzvah, commonly people take a nice size piece of food, whether it's a piece of meat, there has to be, now the food item, that there is a requirement, it's mentioned in the Gemara, that the food item that is used has to be something that can be eaten together with bread. Meaning it has to be a food that is a significant food that is eaten as a focus of a meal. So therefore, a piece of chicken, or meat, or fish, an egg, people would use hard-boiled egg, minhag people use, anything like that. But one could not use something cooked that is not considered the main part of a meal. Okay, so therefore, I don't know, I don't know exactly how they make, let's say you had horseradish. I don't know if it's cooked. Maybe it is.
String beans.
String beans, I'm not sure, maybe. Oh, okay. But let's say something like horseradish, which is, I believe, cooked, and something like that, but it's not, you know, that's just a condiment. So that type of thing, a person could not use Erev Tavshilin. But anything that is considered, you know, commonly, you could use even milk if you're going to eat dairy on Shabbos. You know, if you have that minhag or whatever it is, if you love eating dairy, you could make Erev Tavshilin. You can make Erev Tavshilin with the cheese if you wanted to. But the fact is that it should be something which is kosher. I'm sorry, Rabbi. Yeah.
Is there a cheese?
How
early can you make
an Erev? Okay, now, how early can you make an Erev Tavshilin? How early can you make an Erev Tavshilin? Now, this really depends on why the rabbis instituted Erev Tavshilin. Okay, and that is as follows. The poskim say, now, let's say a person comes and says, you know, very practically, they say, look, it's going to be 3 out of the next 4 weeks that we have to do this. It's going to be next Wednesday, then skip a week, then the week after that, and the week after that. You know what? Let me just make one Erev Tavshilin, and it'll be for all of them. That's it. I'll take a nine. Now, today, in the world of preservatives, that could be done. You have with refrigeration and preservatives, right? So you'll take a piece of matzah, which can last you for Lord knows how long, right? You'll get it in the store, right? But, you know, the matzah that you buy, who knows when they baked it, right? And you'll take a piece of fish, let's say, or something which could be put in the refrigerator and it'll hold. And you'll say, that's it, I'm making the Erev Tavshilin, should be good for all of them. And, you know, if you really want to be resourceful, you want to look at the whole, now everyone gets all the calendars in the mail, you could check out how all the other Yom Tovim are going to fall out. Let's see what's going to be with Pesach and Shavuos. And you know what? I'll take something that holds the whole year. I'll stick it in the freezer, right? And I'll make, well, that's this will be my yearly Erev Tavshilin. Can you do that or not? So the answer is, this is a machlokas in the post of whether you can do this, and it is based upon what the explanation to Erev Tavshilin is. Because if the explanation to Erev Tavshilin is that just there should be some hecker that really you could have cooked from Yom Tov to Shabbos, because it's not a problem. But the rabbis were concerned that a person may, you know, think that, hey, if you can cook for Yom Tov to Shabbos, you can cook for Yom Tov to the week also. So then it would suffice to one time make an Erev Tavshilin, because, okay, I got the message. I don't have to remind myself every time. I just internalized this halacha, that it's special because it's Yom Tov to Shabbos. And therefore, how did I internalize that? Because I made an Erev Tavshilin and finished. That's it. So I don't have to keep doing it over and over again. I got the message. You don't have to tell me this 10 times. I understand. You can only do it for Yom Tov to Shabbos, so I did it. However, if the reason is what Rava said, Kadesh Shiyivra Mani Yafel Shabbos, if the reason is that we want to make sure that you don't, that the Rabbanim specifically wanted people to make preparations on Erev Yom Tov, because they were concerned that if you wait till Yom Tov to make all your preparations, so then you might, in your excitement, eat most of the food on Yom Tov and not leave over anything good for Shabbos. So if that's true, that concern presents itself every single time. So therefore, it would really depend on which explanation of the Gemara Maseches Be'ah we accept. So in reality, this is discussed in the poskim, and basically it's unclear who the halacha, which opinion the halacha follows in the Gemara Maseches Be'ah, and thus the Shulchan Aruch rules that rit l'chadchila, meaning preferably, one should be strict in this and make an Erev Tavshilin every time it's Erev Yom Tov. However, b'di'evet, if a person made an Erev Tavshilin and had in mind that this is going to be for all the other situations, so b'di'evet, the Shulchan Aruch rules that one could rely on that. However, I didn't say it correctly, let me clarify. There is a question, in other words, there is a heter b'di'evet if a person were to make an Erev Tavshilin and say this should be for more than just today. However, even that heter has a lot of uncertainty attached to it, because there are those who say that heter would only work if it's within the same yontif. Like, for example, Sukkot. So you're going to have the first days of Sukkot and what we call the last days of Sukkot, so it's within the context of one yontif, then it's okay. But from Rosh Hashanah to Sukkot, maybe no good. Or from Sukkot to Pesach, maybe no good. So you have that issue, and there are other issues as well. So therefore, it's really not a good idea to do this efficient, economical mode of one Erev Tavshilin for the whole time, but rather a person really should make a separate Erev Tavshilin every single time. So therefore, 3 out of the next 4 Wednesdays, you would have to remember to make an Erev Tavshilin. The common minhag, therefore, is to make an Erev Tavshilin on the day of Erev Yontif. The day of Erev Yontif, the question whether you can make it the night before when it's technically Erev Yontif, I didn't see clearly discussed. My impression is that the minhag is that people make it on the day of Erev Yontif. That's when it's done, because that's really when you're preparing, even though you'll say, what do you mean my wife prepares the night before? Okay, it could be. I'm not sure, I'll be honest with you, I'm not sure what the halacha is as far as that is concerned, but on the day of Erev Yontif, that's when it's done. Yeah.
You don't need to eat the food.
I'm going to get to it. Okay, so now, just to finish up here, correct practice. Well, let's back up. The Erev Tavshilin, once it's made, has to be guarded. Okay, it has to be guarded, and that means that you have to be careful that it doesn't get mixed up with the rest of your food. Because if you by accident ate the Erev Tavshilin before the second day of Yom Tov rolls around, you would not be allowed to cook for Shabbos. You must have the Erev Tavshilin in existence on the second day of Yom Tov. So therefore, it is prudent that a person should put aside Erev Tavshilin, maybe take a marker, wrap it up in something, and mark that this is the Erev Tavshilin, just because in all the commotion involved in serving meals on Yom Tov, and you have company and all kinds of things, and in the kitchen there's a lot of activity going on, and a person could make a mistake. So therefore, it is correct. It is obligated that a person should have the Erev Tavshilin in existence. But it is correct to therefore go ahead and somehow mark it off. Make sure you don't eat it. Now, do you need to eat the Erev Tavshilin itself on Shabbos? So the answer is technically you don't have to. However, it is the minhag that a person should try to eat it on Shabbos because of the fact that it was made for Shabbos and it was used for a mitzvah, and we have a concept that once something is used for a mitzvah, let's use it again for another mitzvah, and therefore we would attempt to eat the Erev Tavshilin on Shabbos. There are some people who go to the extent that they would have a challah that they use for the Erev Tavshilin, so then when it comes Friday night, once Shabbos starts, you could eat it. Then technically you could eat the whole thing on Shabbos on Friday night, but what some people do is that they will take the challah and use it as the second one for the Lecha Mishnah Friday night, and then after they say Hamotzi, they'll put this one aside, and then Shabbos morning again they'll do it, and then by Shal Shudas they'll eat it, and that way they maximize the Erev Tavshilin that they got to use it for all three meals. You don't have to do this if you don't want to, but it's a nice thing to at least use it for one of the meals. If you have a challah, so use it for the Lechem Mishnah, that would be using it directly for another mitzvah, and if the person had a piece of fish or an egg or whatever it is, the right thing to do. However, if you didn't eat it on Shabbos, that's not a problem. But what is a problem is if you ate it before Shabbos, then you have a problem. In other words, you have to at least have it by the second day of Yontif. Now, the truth of the matter is, once you prepare on the second day of Yontif, technically you could eat the Erev Tavshilin on the second day of Yontif, because I did the preparations already. So it's done. Once it's done, so now I could really eat it now. But the minhag is to leave it for Shabbos. That's what we do. Okay, yes.
So you also mentioned that there were other things, non-food items.
I'm going to get to that. I'm going to get to that in a minute. Now, well, almost finished here. Now, what happens if a person did not make an Erev Tavshilin? So, if you didn't make an Erev Tavshilin, the truth is that really requires a shiur in itself, because this gets a little complicated. There are certain heter which exists, but it does not exist on Rosh Hashanah because of the nature of Rosh Hashanah being different than all the other Yom Tovim, because the other Yom Tovim that are observed in Chutz Laaretz is 2 days. So, the second day of Yom Tov is purely a Suffolk day. It's with the Sveika of the Yoma is called in Aramaic, right? The fact that we're not sure which day is the 15th day of Tishrei, or at least in the old times they weren't sure, when people lived in Chutz Laaretz weren't sure. So therefore, when it comes to the first day of Sukkot, which is on the 15th day of Tishrei, so we're not sure if it's that day, or perhaps it could have been the next day, so therefore we observe both days. If that would be the case, it would be technically one could make an Erev Tavshilin on the first day of Yontif itself, because you could say the following logic. You could say, look, between these 2 days, only one of them is really Yontif. Right? Now, we are obligated, without exception, a person who lives in Chutz Laaretz is obligated to observe both days of Yontif, but from a strictly technical standpoint, only one of them is really the day. So therefore, one could technically stipulate and say that, well, look, if you know, let's say it's Thursday, Friday, Shabbos, it'll be Sukkot, Thursday, Friday, and Shabbos. So the person on Thursday says, listen, if today is the day, then tomorrow is not. So then tomorrow I can cook for Shabbos. And if today is not the day, but rather it's tomorrow, then today I can make an Erev Tavshilin, right? So therefore, a person could make an Erev Tavshilin on the first day of Yontif on that basis without the bracha. Bracha is not said if you fall into that situation. But that's one thing that could be done. It's a little confusing. But on Rosh Hashanah, that heter does not apply, because the 2 days of Rosh Hashanah were observed even in the times, even in Eretz Yisrael, in the times of the Beis HaMikdash. The Gemara tells us that for a certain reason, there was a certain cutoff point there were certain situations where even in Eretz Yisrael, even in the Beis HaMikdash, 2 days of Rosh Hashanah were observed, and that is why we observe 2 days of Rosh Hashanah. Even Jews living in Israel observe 2 days of Rosh Hashanah, and because of that, Rosh Hashanah becomes a whole different dynamic. Rosh Hashanah is considered what's called the Yom HaRichta, is considered like one long day, which is a technical term, and therefore this trick that I just mentioned would not apply. It really requires its own shiur to understand the ins and outs of this. But the fact is, if a person does not make an Erev Tavshilin, So to this coming Rosh Hashanah, what could the person do? So it's not a simple way to get out of it. There is a heter that a person could rely, the rabbi of the community, the rabbi of, I'm sure every shul, makes an Erev Tavshilin, not just on behalf of his household, but on behalf of all the people in the community. And if that is so, technically you could rely on that. However, we find in the Gemara that that dispensation was given to a person only once in their lifetime. Once in your lifetime. That's it. You have to remember, you used it, you get one time the ability to use that heter. Okay? But if once you used it, you should live to 120. If you used it when you were 20, for the next 100 years, you're on your own. That's it. You can't. You got one time. What's that?
Once per person or once per rabbi?
No, no. Once per person. Once per person. Okay. And finally, just in terms of... So for this reason, because of the fact that it's not, as they say, gishmak, it's not a pleasant feeling to not have made an Erev Tavshilin, a person really should try. It's the simplest thing in the world to do. It's a very good idea not to push it off. Finally, what else does the Erev Tavshilin permit? So an Erev Tavshilin permits any preparation that is permitted for Yontif, for Shabbos. Therefore, starting from a simple thing like lighting candles, right? A woman lighting candles for Shabbos on the second day of Rosh Hashanah. So what is the heter to light the candles? You don't need the candles now because it's daytime, right? So you're lighting the candles, but you have to light the candles on before Shabbos. So you're lighting the candles for tonight. But you can't light candles, you can't do Moloch on Yontif for a different day. Even for Shabbos, right? That's the whole issue. So if you have an Erev Tavshilin, you're allowed to light the candles. A woman who did not, if a man forgot to make an Erev Tavshilin, there are those who would say that it would even be a Shaila if his wife could light candles that night because of the fact that you run into this problem, which is again another big motivation to make sure you do it, right? But if you made an Erev Tavshilin, you could light candles. You could set the table Friday afternoon for Friday night, even though that would otherwise not have been permitted because it's not needed for today, it's not needed for Yontif, but never, you can't set the table for one day of Yontif for the next day of Yontif, right? So, but yet, you could set the table on Friday for Friday night. The Gabbai in the shul can roll the Torah. You can roll the Torah, on, even though, again, that you can't prepare from one day of Yontif to the next, but on Friday afternoon, you could go ahead next week and roll the Torah from the laning of Rosh Hashanah to the Parashas Hazinu, which would be next that Shabbos, right? You could roll the Torah. If you lived in a place where there was no Erev, even if you live in a place where there is an Erev, there's a question if you can carry on Yontif for the next day, so the question would come up, can I carry all my towels from shul if I'm not going to need it anymore today? Right? So if there's an Erev, I guess it's not such a big deal, but technically there's an issue that you're preparing from Yontif to Shabbos, some say. There's a disagreement on this point, but according to all opinions, if you made an Erev Tavshilin, you could carry home your towels from shul, even if you live in a place where there was no Erev, you could carry home the talis and say, even though because I need the talis for Shabbos, because tomorrow Shabbos I have a bar mitzvah in a different shul, and therefore I want to have my talis at home. I don't want to have to go to my regular shul to pick it up in the morning. I want to have it at home. So I'm preparing today for tomorrow with the Erev Tavshilin that's permitted. So basically, this is, there are more details, but this is the basic overview of the laws of Erev Tavshilin. As I say, it's coming up three times in the next 4 weeks. So it is prudent for a person to really try to remember that it should be announced in all the shuls. It wouldn't be a bad idea if one or two strategically placed signs had also, they have nowadays, the shuls have these phone call things that, they call the whole membership, to tell them announce a shiur or whatever, or a board meeting or whatever it may be. So it wouldn't be a bad idea if they made such a phone call to remind people to make an Erev Tavshilin. But hopefully now we're all prepared to face up to the challenge, and it takes a total of 2 minutes to do this. You just open up a siddur, get your piece of challah and a piece of fish or whatever else you want to use, and just make sure you put it away somewhere that you don't need it. Yes.